Hello, everybody, and welcome to Module 6, our final module in the Creative Freedom Apprenticeship. This is Lisa Robin Young, and today we're taking on pricing, free stuff, and understanding your offerings from your client's point of view. The good news is that there are no worksheets this week, just a couple of exercises that we're actually going to do in class to help you get more clarity around pricing your offers and making it easier for more of your right clients to say yes to what it is that you have to offer. If you've been following along with us, you should have launched a 30-day platform experiment by now, and hopefully you're starting to get some of those word choices down from your audience. You've been practicing using their words in order to create more resonance. Resonance is the first piece of the know, like, and trust factor. And you may be wondering, why did you save this till the end? Because until you get the clarity on who you are and what you're about, it doesn't make sense to be showing up in the world, throwing spaghetti on the wall to see what will stick. What's important here is that you show up fully as you, so that people can get to know you, like you, and trust you. Know, like, and trust are the pillars of a successful enterprise. Your potential clients need to know you well enough, like you well enough, and trust you enough to agree to part with their hard-earned cash and say yes to your offer. Now, the trick here is the word enough. Enough is relative, and it's relative to everybody. My sense of getting to know you well enough may be different than your sense of getting to know me well enough. I have clients on my mailing list who waited 3 or 4 years before they ever made a purchase with me, not because they couldn't afford me, but because they weren't sure, they weren't ready yet. And I've had other people who get on my mailing list and the same day they're making a purchase, or they make a purchase before they even get on my mailing list because they know me, likely, and trust me from what they've seen on video or on social media or whatever. Jeffrey Gittimer, who is a sales coach and an author of too many books to mention, he likes to say that all things being equal, people prefer to do business with their friends. All things not being equal, people still prefer to do business with their friends. But they'll settle if they have to. So being friendly is a big deal in business. And it's hard for somebody to like you if they don't know who you are. So that's why we did all of this prep work. That's why we talked about being yourself, and that's powerful, okay? Will some people bristle and decide that they don't like you? Yep. Pretty sure that's going to happen a lot. I get it a lot. But your right people will adore you because you're real to them. They can relate to you. They resonate with you. I can't imagine wanting to spend my days with a personality like Shock Jock Howard Stern, and yet his biggest fans think he is the bee's knees. So you've got to be thinking about that. When you're standing tall as yourself, people have the chance to fall madly and deeply in love with you and your awesomeness. That's what this platform experiment is all about. Giving yourself permission to just show up, start conversations, and see what happens. Be yourself. Be willing to be yourself and see what conversations happen and who shows up to cheer you on. That's how we start to open the door on knowing us and liking us. Trust comes over time. When you show up consistently and do what you say you're going to do, it's that threshold of belief exercise in a very real way. People you first meet, they don't know you. They don't know if you're reliable and trustworthy. You have to earn that. So you say you're going to do something small, like send them an email every week, and then you do it. Over time, they start to realize, hey, you're somebody who keeps their word. You're a person of your word. You do what you say you're going to do. And that, more than anything else, builds trust. Consistency builds trust. And I don't remember if I've shared this story. My mother, when she was alive, would swear up one side and down the other when we were on the road. If we needed to go to the bathroom, we would stop at a McDonald's because McDonald's always had the cleanest restrooms on the road. Always. That was her thing. She could consistently rely on. She could trust that McDonald's had a clean potty until the day that McDonald's didn't have a clean potty and she was completely up in arms. Now, nowhere in McDonald's brand promise does it say we have clean restrooms, but they were consistently clean whenever she went in there, so she had an expectation. She trusted them to have clean restrooms, and then the day they didn't, her trust was broken, and she was disheartened, and, oh, my gosh, I'm never going to go to McDonald's again. Trust more than anything else, okay? Consistency builds trust. And you can trust someone and not like them. You can know someone to be incredibly reliable and always do something that pushes your buttons consistently. You can trust them to do that, and that doesn't mean you like them. So know, like, and trust are not always inextricably linked. Liking someone comes from creating resonance, building a connection, and sometimes doing something for them, you know, showing them kindness. Gary Chapman's 5 love languages can give you some great ideas about the ways to be kind and show love to your audience. Acts of service, words of appreciation, gifts, physical touch, quality time. When you step up and do these things in a genuine way without expecting anything in return, your likability increases. And here's an example I want you to think about. Why did you register for this class? What was it that made you trust me enough to say yes to investing your money and showing up to that first class? You probably trusted my reputation enough that if the class bombed, you knew you could get your money back. And if you know me at all, you know that I tend to give a lot more than I promise. So if you pay for a 20-minute coaching session, I fill that 20 minutes as full as we can, and sometimes we're not complete, we need to run over, so I give you a little bit of extra time. And if you spend enough time around me listening to what I share and teach and how I do it, you may like my approach and my style enough to be willing to attend that first class. But here we are at class number 6. What kept you coming back? This is an important question. Because sometimes I'll buy a book, pick it up, read the first chapter, and be like, oh, I'm putting that book away. I'm never going to read it again. I'm not going to finish that book. I'm not going to get through it. What keeps you reading? What keeps you engaged? What keeps you coming back week after week, class after class? Was it just the results you're getting? Was it my lovely personality? What was it that made you say yes and keep saying yes? Because in the world of online courses, it's not uncommon to have less than 30% of your students actually complete your course, which to me just blows my mind. My completion rate tends to be closer to 80%, and my clients get results because of it. But why? Why do you stick with it? Why are you still here? And that's a question you want to explore for yourself in your own business, because very often the reasons are the same for your clients. Why did they turn to you instead of someone else in the first place? Maybe it was convenience. Maybe they were your friends. You know, maybe you had some in somewhere. But why did they come to you instead of somebody else? And then why do they continue to stick with you? Why do they continue to do business with you? Those reasons are important, and the answers will lead you to ways that you can deepen your client relationships and make sales even easier in the future, regardless of your pricing. The deeper the relationship, the easier it is to pretty much name your price. That's why Apple can price things at price points that most of us would think are insane, and the biggest fans of Apple will gladly pay it. Like, you can get a laptop anywhere for a couple $100, but if you want a MacBook, you're going to shell out thousands of dollars, even for a refurbished one. They don't cost that much to make. They've set the price and built the relationship with their audience in such a way that their audience is like, okay, I will pay that, whatever you want, okay. And this is where the concept of free stuff comes in. If you've been in the online world at all, you've probably heard of opt-ins. These are those handy little giveaways that people offer in exchange for your email. You create something. In my case, I created a 7-day taster version of this course, a little sample of this course. And then You make it available for new subscribers to get a feel for you, to get to know you and what it is that you offer. But that doesn't always guarantee that they're going to like you or trust you. I can create an opt-in. They can sign up for my list, get the course, and be like, oh, my gosh, I hate this. I don't like her style. I don't like her analogy. I don't like the way she teaches. Ugh, unsubscribe. It happens. Okay? That's a way for them to get to know you, and that's why it's important that you're putting you out there for people to see. Yeah, people, some of them are going to say no, but the right people will say yes. So I hope you're seeing how these pieces are starting to fit together. Free stuff is valuable only when it's used to help your client get to know you, like you, or trust you more. And there is a danger, a big danger, in using free stuff as an enticement to get people to like you. So I tend to focus on using free so that people can get to know me and get to trust me. A free newsletter every week, that builds trust. There's consistency, and the information is in there so people can get to know what I'm about. What kind of things do I talk about? What kind of things do I share? What kind of things are important to me? So I try to use free stuff for know and trust. On the back end, when I'm doing bonuses and giving away free things to people who are already on my list, then that's where I'm using it as a way to get them to like me. But here's the danger in that. In fact, I see this most as the place where entrepreneurs fall down because they get over-generous. Too much time, too much energy, too much money going out because they're trying to win favor. They're trying to win likes. They want to get more people to like them. But like alone does not equate to business, okay? You can get lots of people who like you, you know, and you see it all the time, fan pages with, you know, 10 or 20,000 likes, Twitter followers up the gazoo, and they're not making any money. They got lots of people who like them, but nobody who's doing business with them. You have to have all three. So imagine this scenario, if you will. You're considering going out with someone because you've heard a little bit about them. So they ask you out to dinner, their treat, and you say yes. And they pick you up in style, and they take you to this fancy place. And they open doors and pull out chairs, and they make you feel really special. You're having a good time, and you're thinking, hey, this is going pretty well. I just might want to see you again. And the date ends amicably. You're dropped off with a polite handshake or a peck on the cheek, nothing too forward. So far, so good, right? You're feeling good. Had a good time. This is a good time. And the next day, you get a call. Oh, I just wanted to say how awesome you are. And you think, oh, that's really sweet. And then at noon, some flowers come. And then the next day, the same thing, a call, flowers, and then a singing telegram at dinner time. And then the next day, a call and flowers and a singing telegram and a card in the mail. Is it starting to feel a little creepy or a little desperate yet? But this is what entrepreneurs do every single day in business. They keep giving and giving and giving, and not because they want to enhance the relationship, but because they want someone to say, yes, I'll buy your stuff. They're asking for validation. Tell me I'm awesome. Validate me. Please like me. And all you've done is bribed your way into Creepersville. So, yes, there is a time and a place for free. And there's a time and a place for your clients and potential clients to make an investment in your relationship. Otherwise, it's not a relationship. So how much free is too much? Well, it varies from one business to another. It depends on your business model. Creative Live, for example, offers nearly every class for free for a limited time. They don't have a blog or an opt-in, so it makes sense for them to offer free trials and bite-sized samplings of their offer. But if you want the bonus materials, or if you want to own the course beyond the free trial period so that you have access to it regularly so that you can really digest the content, then you got to make an investment. You've got to buy the course. You know, they're already putting out for the bandwidth to broadcast the show in the first place, so it makes sense. Let's do it and give it away for free so that we have a large audience. And then there are going to be some people who can't sit around for the whole thing, or they're going to miss a segment, or they want to get the bonus materials, so we're going to sell them access to the full class so that they have it forever. It's a great business model. Apple, on the other hand, puts all their products on display in the store and lets you use them right there in the store before you buy them. Try before you buy is how you build trust. But you don't see Apple giving away computers at every store. They're not standing there going, here's a free laptop, here's a free MacBook, here's a free iPod. That's not a sustainable business model. So are you creating a business model that allows you to be generous? See, this is why we saved pricing till the end, because you've got to get clear on your core values. You've got to get clear on who you are and what really matters to you before we start talking about money, because money clouds everything. It makes things murky. So are you creating a business model that allows you to be generous? When I was helping to launch a new direct selling company, it was recommended by a consultant that we set our prices at least 5 times higher than cost so that we could cover the overhead and all the incentives, bonuses, and compensation required to grow a healthy sales force. A 500% markup so that we could be generous. All those host gifts, gifts with purchases, they're made possible by a pricing plan that gives the company plenty of financial breathing room to be generous. Generosity is baked into their business model. And it needs to be the same with you. Have you ever had an instance where someone asked you to do something, and maybe to you it was no big deal, you know, something you could bang out pretty quickly, maybe I can do this in my sleep kind of a thing. So they ask, and you say, oh, no problem, and you do it. But then when they want to offer you some kind of compensation, let me take you out to dinner, let me give you some money, let me watch your kids for you, let me whatever, you say, oh, no, that's okay. It was no big deal. Really, it was no big deal. It's okay. I got it. No problem. You just turned away money, yo. You just, like, said, I don't need money. Money's not important to me. No, it's okay. Uh-uh. I'm good. Thanks. But the deeper question I want you to think about is this. Did you turn it away because you didn't value the time you invested with them, or did you do it because you were intentionally being generous? Dun, dun, dun. Let me ask it again. Did you turn that compensation away because you didn't value the time you invested with them, or did you do it because you were intentionally being generous? I've done this myself, okay, and I've had several clients who've turned away money. Compensation is an interesting word because compensation doesn't just mean money. Sometimes somebody wants to pay you. Sometimes they want to do something for you. Maybe they want to send you a card. You're like, oh, no, that's okay. You're shutting the door to abundance and closing the faucet of flow every time you say no thank you to a blessing like that. Look, you've spent years honing your great work, getting good at what you do. All those years of practice and effort are what made it so easy for you. And it's why they couldn't do it for themselves, because they haven't invested the time. And you're training people to treat you that way consistently because they've come to expect that the little things will always be free and no big deal. Unless you're setting them up to understand that you're being generous. So sometimes a client will come to me and say, I need help with this, and I help them, and they say, well, how much do I owe you? And I say, this time is on me because I can afford to be generous today. But next time, I can't make that commitment. I can't promise it will always be free, but this time it's free for you. You have to qualify it. You have to go out of your way to assert the value, even if you're going to give it away. Because if you don't, they come to expect that every time they come to you, they're going to get it for free or next to nothing, or it's not going to be a big deal. It is a big deal. Your life matters. You're giving away precious minutes of your life that you will never, ever, 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 ever get back, ever. And you're investing it in their thing, their project, their task, their ask. You need to value that. Threshold of belief. We keep coming back to it. When I realized what I was doing, I invoked this generosity clause, and I started practicing it. Today it's free because I can afford to be generous. I can't always promise that it will be free, but today I can. So today for you, no charge. And I just practiced saying it, and I still practice saying it. But I also set up what I call my stray cat fund. You know, the little old lady in the neighborhood who rounds up all the stray cats and feeds them and takes care of them and that kind of thing. This is my stray cat fund because there are always people who can't afford to work with me. There are always people who need my help, even for the simple little things. So I created a monthly allotment of time, money, hours, a budget for those things, and I call it my stray cat fund. I'm willing to do X number of hours of free work this month or provide support in the equivalent of X number of dollars for this month to X number of people this month. That's part of my giving back in the cycle of sales. It's part of me extending my reach and doing some lead generation. Every once in a while, I will offer free coaching calls to people during the month because I've got stray cat fund time to give. I'm trying to open the money flow. And it's not because I want to coach with that person to get them to coach with me and get money from them. It's because I have the space available. I want to be of service. I'm being generous intentionally. But I never do the work for free. This is an important qualification. I offer scholarships for programs like this because I know it can help people. But there's an investment required. My scholarship recipients have to do the work. They got to show up. They got to put in the hours to get the results. They've also got to give me feedback, keep me in the loop, give me a testimonial if they feel so inclined. They've got to have some skin in the game too, so to speak. I don't do anything that's just free. Like, here it is out in the world, not from a business use my brain standpoint. My blog posts are free. My videos are free. Some of my webinars are free. I do have free baked into my business model. But when it comes to, can I pick your brain? Can I get your thoughts on? Will you review my XYZ? I will do it, but there's a cost. And it may not be a monetary one, but here's where I'm at. Okay? And that's where free is useful in your business. When your clients and potential clients can experience your generosity and increase their resonance with you, that is where free comes in handy. But to give to someone that's not reciprocating, that's just creepy desperation. Okay, that's flowers and a singing telegram and, you know, the limo comes to pick you up and take you to and from work. It's just creepy. Okay? So what are you training your audience to expect? Are you training them to expect creepy? Or are you training them to expect excellence? Are you training them to expect that you know your stuff and you're worth the investment? Are you training them to expect that you've built a business model that allows you to be generous when you can be and you're making money too? So if you're not a blogger or you don't have an opt-in gift, that's not a big deal, provided that you found other ways to effectively give people a taste of who you are and what you offer. The free sample builds trust, credibility, likability, and resonance. People try my free videos. They read my free blog. They attend a free webinar. If they like it or they want more, they subscribe to my newsletter, or they invest in a course, or even take things deeper by getting on one-on-one coaching or support. But very few people just show up and go, I want a coach. I'm hiring you. They've had some investment with me, i.e. they spent time reading my blog, watching my videos, hanging out with me on social media. They've gotten to know me, to like me, and to trust me enough that they're willing to shell out the money that I request for coaching fees. So once we get past free, past lead generation, past bonus giving, we've got to establish pricing that allows us to be generous in the first place. If you're in a business where the products or services you offer already have a price on them, you've still got room here, albeit not as much as someone who can set their own prices. So if you're a direct seller and everything is listed in the catalog at a certain price, you're less likely to have a bunch of pricing issues. However, if you want to be seen as more than just a direct seller, you're going to want to pay attention here because I've seen direct sellers parlay their product offering into a much bigger business by making it part of something else, like the interior designer who's also a direct sales consultant for a home decor company, or the chef who also teaches cooking classes that feature her direct sales line of kitchen products. Okay. So I've seen business owners who use the direct sales product line as a component in a larger offering. All right. And what you choose to do with your products and services is truly only limited to your imagination. Remember our conversation about Starbucks, where a 50-cent cup of coffee is sold for $5 or more, okay? The experience makes a difference on the pricing. You don't walk into a store like Walmart and expect to pay Neiman Marcus prices. And you don't expect to walk into Neiman Marcus and pay Walmart prices. And yet, Walmart has generosity baked into their business model. They give money back to their communities. So there's a profit margin in there that's big enough that allows them to give back, and they are the low-price competitor. They make no bones about it. That's their branding. So they've created a business where they are the low price, and they can still afford to be generous. Now, how they do that and whether or not you agree with it is not what this conversation is about, but I'm showing you that it can be done regardless of the price point as long as you have been intentional about what you're doing. Now, pricing is a challenge for most people because they feel like they have to justify why they've priced something the way they have. $5,000? What? Why in the world would someone pay $5,000? And we immediately go into reactionary mode. Well, it's because it's fine Corinthian leather, and it's because it was imported from Italy, and it's because it actually costs $2,000 to make, and it's because. Look, if somebody wants it, they'll pay $5,000 for it. You don't have to justify it. Why? We always, and I mean always, make our decisions based on emotion first, and then we use logic to justify it. That's how the human brain works. Everybody's brain works the same way. When we're faced with a decision, a yes or no decision, our emotion leads, and then we justify it logically on the back end. Right brain, left brain. It's the way it always goes. So let's use that to our advantage, shall we? And I don't mean that in the let's take advantage of people. I mean instead of railing against what our instincts tell us, let's honor it. Let's listen to ourselves, to our bodies, to what our hearts are telling us. Let's go into that heart-centered marketing space and get clear on what pricing is really going to work for us. So we're going to do two exercises during this session, and we're going to do them back-to-back. The first brings us back to the threshold of belief exercise, except that this time we're going to focus in on just one of your offerings. And you may have an army of things that you offer, products and services galore. I want you to pick one, just for the sake of this exercise. And then you can go back and listen to this recording and do it over and over and over and over again for every offering that you have to your heart's content. So just pick one product or service that you'd like to get some price clarity on. Okay? Maybe it's your hourly rates. Maybe it's a particular service. Doesn't matter to me. And we're going to take the next few minutes to hone in on your resonant price. This is the price that's in your comfort zone. We're also going to establish your comfort zone via the threshold of belief. The price that doesn't feel scary. The price that feels comfortable. The price that feels outrageous. The price that feels ridiculously low. We're going to look at all of that, and we're going to start with setting the price floor. What's that number that feels absolutely like, you want to pay me? Well, I don't think so, okay? So take a deep breath. And relax. I want you to focus in on what your offering is. Think about the details of your offering. What does it entail? How does it work? What kind of effort goes into making this offering possible? Just let the answers flow to you. This isn't an exercise in lots of thinking. Just whatever comes up for you right now. Stay as relaxed as possible and just breathe into, you've got this offering. You've got this thing you want to share with the world. And this is what it is, and this is how it works, and this is what makes it so awesome. Now, as you're sitting there with this wonderful thing, like see it in front of you, like maybe in your hand or out in the world, just kind of in front of you. And as you're sitting there breathing and admiring this wonderful thing that you have, somebody's coming up to you with cash in hand, ready to pay you for your offering. And it is way too little for all the time, energy, and effort that you have put into creating this great offering. And they stick their hand out with this cash in their hand. What amount of money did they just offer you? And you're like, oh my gosh, no way, I'm sorry. That's not even close to what I need for this offer. I'm sorry. No, no, not today. A number came up for you, or more than likely a number came up for you. Write it down. That's your floor. That's the number that makes it not worth your time to offer this great work. And don't judge. Just write it down. I don't care what the number was. Just write it down. And yes, the number can be zero. If they had no money in their pockets, the number can be zero. Breathe. Once you've written that down, just go back to breathing. That person is gone now. And there's your great offering, your great work. It's out in front of you. It's out in the world. It's on display. Rest back into its awesomeness and know that it is so valuable, this offer that you want to share with your right audience, okay? Not just anybody who comes along with a nickel, like anybody. We want this for your right people. And so another person is coming along, this time with a blank check, and she says she'll pay any sum of money for what you're offering. And she starts writing, and you can't believe the number of zeros on this check. And you feel really uncomfortable, and you tell her, oh, no, 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 no. You couldn't possibly accept that much money. That's way too much for this. No way. That's just, oh, no, 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 too much money. Tear up the check. You're going to have to start over. That's too much. And she says, but I want to pay this. And you're like, nope, nope, no, I can't accept. That's way too much. No, I'm sorry. What was that number? What amount do they just offer you? Write it down. Again, no judgment. Just write it down because that's your ceiling. That's the number that makes you uncomfortable, not about your offer, but about your value. Think about that. It's not about the offer. Because if it was just about the offer, you'd take whatever anybody wanted to give you for it. Any price would be okay because it's about the offer. Mm-mm. This is about your value. And that's why pricing is so tricky. Don't judge it. Just write it down. And now breathe. Because that stirs up emotional gunk. So let's just breathe. We're going to breathe a little bit here. Come back to that centered space where your great work is out in front of you and it's on display for the world. Breathe some more. And as you're resting into your value and the awesomeness of this thing that you're bringing into the world and the idea of sharing what you've got with your right audience in the world, another person comes up. And they look at it, and they want it, and they just ask you, how much? And what's your first response? How much? Write it down. Again, don't judge it. Just write it down. Leave the judgment behind, and just write it down. This is the number that is most likely in your comfort zone. It's not too high. It's not too low. It feels reasonably okay. Maybe it feels really good. Like, I feel real good about this. Maybe it feels like a stretch. Maybe it still feels like you're underpricing, but it's within the comfort zone of the ridiculous and the sublime. Okay? We found your spectrum. So breathe and come back to me here. But here's the kicker. This number by itself is mostly unhelpful. It's not worthless. It's very valuable, but it's not helpful, because that number may or may not be sustainable for you. That number may or may not give you room to be generous. That number may or may not need to change. So here's where we use the second exercise to give us some perspective. I want you to think about the spectrum of your industry. Okay? So if you're a designer, think about the different types of design companies that are out there. If you're a painter, think about the different types of visual arts paint types that there are out there. If you are a musician, if you are a salesperson in a particular market like jewelry or home decor or whatever, think about that market. Think about that industry. I'm going to use coffee as the example because we just keep coming back to that and it's easy. There are a spectrum of coffee providers, and they come at different price points. Is your offering priced on the Starbucks end of the spectrum or the gas station store brand, generic store brand end of the spectrum? Where is your offering in relation to the rest of your industry market? Okay, that's important. Pricing doesn't happen in a vacuum. You know, in the direct selling industry, you've got a 500% markup minimum on your product, but that's because it's a direct selling industry as opposed to Walmart. Okay, I can't tell you how many times I would do a home show and someone would say, I can buy that same thing at Walmart for $2. Why should I buy it from you? Well, if you really want to buy it at Walmart, go ahead, but it's going to have different ingredients. It's going to have different characteristics. It doesn't come with our fabulous lifetime guarantee, et cetera. Okay? And that's where we do that logical justification, but it's also where we determine why we belong in a certain category in our industry versus a different category. Why we belong in the direct selling category versus the Walmart category. Why we belong in the Neiman Marcus category versus the Walmart category. Okay? Now, where does your price point and your offering sit in the spectrum of your industry right now today? Don't judge the answer. Just own the truth of where you're at right now today. So if your price is in the middle of the road, then you're in the middle of the road. If your price is on the high end, then you're on the high end. If your price is on the low end, then you're on the low end. Okay? On the spectrum of your market, where do you fall? And then the follow-up question, where do you want to fall? This is the eye-opener. This was a huge eye-opener for me. I had been driving so hard, so hard. I want to be the Neiman Marcus of my brand. I want to be the da-da-da-da-da. And when I got clear on my pricing and my right people, I recognized that I don't want to be the Neiman Marcus of my brand, of my industry. I don't want to be that top drawer. I don't want to be that high end. I don't want to have all of the baggage that comes along with being at the high end. And to me, it's baggage. To someone who is like, I want to be the Neiman Marcus of my industry, it's not baggage to them. It's all of the extra bonuses and bells and whistles and tiny details that make them worthy of being in that category. And for me, it just feels like a lot of work right now today. But at the same time, I don't want to be the Walmart of my industry either. And I was very clear on that. I am not going to compete on price. I'm not going to be the bargain basement, you know, value offer, you know, at the bottom of the offering scope. And so I had to make some shifts in my pricing and in my approach and how I present myself in order to be in alignment and in integrity with my brand. So where do you want to fall? And what needs to happen for you to be where you want to be? one of the things that I had to do was up-level my content delivery. I did a whole blog redesign last year. I actually paid somebody for the first time ever to do a custom blog design for me. I had never had that before in my 10-plus years of being online. And I finally said, I got to do this because I need to up-level because I don't want to be the Walmart of my brand. I'm not ready to be Neiman Marcus, but I don't want to be Walmart anymore. And I invested in something that I believe really reflected my personality, who I was, and what I was about. And I can't tell you how many times I've gotten compliments and comments. And, you know, it all goes back to where I want to be and who I want to represent in the world as Lisa Robin Young. And I still have some other things that I need to do in order to establish myself more firmly in the place in the market that I want to be. And I've got a list. And I'm slowly checking those things off my list. Now, maybe you're right where you want to be, and there's nothing that you need to do, okay? Then, great. The question is, what do you need to do to make sure you've got the room to be generous at the level that you're at? If you want to be seen as the Starbucks of your industry, and right now you're the store brand, something's got to shift. If you're the Starbucks and that's not where you want to be, you got some things to shift. It's probably easier to downshift than it is to upshift, sort of. You're shifting clientele. You're shifting client expectations. You still got things to shift, okay? But if you're happy where you're at, what do you need to do to make sure you've got the room to be generous? How can you bake generosity into where you're at? These are the important questions when it comes to pricing. Part of my generosity model is to donate a portion of my income to charity. It's baked into my business model. I am not the Walmart of business coaching, and I am not Neiman Marcus, and I'll like it that way. But in order for me to be generous and not be at the bottom of the market, I have to do things that raise my profile in the market that I serve. Now, remember, I'm raising my profile for the people I want to serve. I don't care about everybody else. I don't care about the people, the Walmart audience, who's like, well, you're too expensive. No, I'm sorry. I don't serve the Walmart audience. And it's not because I'm thumbing my nose at them. It's because I've made a conscious choice that these are the kind of people I want to work with. Okay? And for me, that means video, not just blog posts. It means high-quality color PDFs. Not the black and white Word document that doesn't translate to everybody's browser, okay? It costs a little more to do those things, and it's worth it because of how I want to be seen in my marketplace. Now, there are more things that I could do if I wanted to elevate myself to the Neiman Marcus level. I could hire a video crew and have high production value videos with fancy lighting, and Lisa does not have time for all that. That is not where I'm at right now. That is not where I'm investing right now. I want to invest in my audience by giving them what's going to help them. And that's how I want to be seen in the marketplace, okay? These are the questions you need to think about when you are doing your pricing. And here's the thing. It will change over time. Your perceptions about where you are now and where you want to be in the market are going to change. Remember that exercise we did way back in, like, session one or session two where we were talking about originality versus difficulty? The more original you are, the more difficult it is to reach your right audience, the more challenging it is, and that whole spectrum. I want to challenge you to go back to that now, knowing what you know, and recognizing how you can be remarkable, and when you make it easier to find your right people, I would bet it's a lot less difficult for you now than it was when we first started this class. Check in with yourself. Now, is it easy? Maybe it's not a 1, but if it was a 10, maybe now it's a 6 or a 7, okay? And the more clarity you get, the more those numbers are going to change. And here's the thing. Those numbers are just changing because of the perceptions that you have in your head, okay? Your perceptions about where you are and where you want to be in the market are going to change. They've already changed since we started this class together. And as long as you keep yourself engaged with your clients, your right clients, they're going to get it. And the right ones are going to come along for the ride. And again, I will use myself as an example. 2 years ago, 3 years ago, my head was down. I was a direct sales coach and trainer. Bam, 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 bam. That was what I did. That was all I did. I worked with direct sellers till my head fell off. And something happened that caused me to look and say, you know, I've got people coming onto my radar who aren't direct sellers, and I've got direct sellers who don't want to be direct sellers, but they want to be entrepreneurs. How do I serve them better? How do I, you know, what do I need to do? And so my messaging started to shift. I talked less about direct sales specific stuff and more about generally being an entrepreneur and what that meant. And different people started showing up. And some of my diehard direct sellers, they left because they're like, she's not talking about direct sales anymore. Gotta go. Okay, bye-bye. But my right people are still with me. And new people who are my right people are showing up on the horizon. And they're working with me. People who've never worked with me before, who never would have wanted to work with me before because they thought, oh, all I thought you did was that direct sales stuff and I'm not a direct seller. Doors have opened for me. I have worked with best-selling authors. I have worked with half-million-dollar companies, million-dollar companies. I've worked with startups. All this stuff is possible because I shifted because of what I wanted to be about in the world. I didn't want to just serve direct sellers. I love direct sellers. I love the industry. I love what it represents. But it was such a tiny fragment for me of what I could offer the world. It was just a sliver of a facet of a side of a gem that was my great work in the world. And now I have a much wider reach and a much wider net to cast for my right people because it's not just about direct sales anymore. It's not just direct sales jargon on my blog. It's entrepreneurial stuff. And that's what you need to be thinking about for you. Where do you want to stake your claim on the spectrum of your industry? And what needs to shift for you? So as we come to the end of our time together with these great lists that you've made over the last few weeks, if you haven't already, it's time to start taking action. What needs to happen to fire that client that you don't want to work with anymore? Start taking action. And I don't care if you think it's a teeny tiny baby step. Take the smallest step that you feel comfortable taking. Do it. Send the email. Say hello. Reach out. Make a connection. Ask a question. Do some research. Take action. That's the thing that matters most. The timeline isn't nearly as important as the action taking itself. I know we've covered a lot of ground. By now, you should have clarity on next steps, at least a few. And more will become available because remember that feedback loop. Clarity gives us information, which gives us confidence to take courageous action. We take that action. We get more information, which gives us clarity, and the loop continues. Now, you may or may not feel comfortable taking those steps on your own. And I understand that, and I am here to help you. You can always connect with me and schedule a coaching call or get additional support. And I'm working on a way for you to get some ongoing support and accountability as well as a one-on-one intensive option to help you kind of bang it all out in a day. So if you're interested in those ideas, let me know and I will send out more details on that. But that's creative freedom in a nutshell. When you get clear on who you are and what it is that you're trying to get out into the world, when you get clear on who the right people are that resonate with that, when you can use their language and connect with them on their terms and give them reasons and ways to know you, like you, and trust you more so that they can say yes, and you're using that heart-centered marketing that recognizes and appreciates who they are instead of trying to force something down their throat, that's where you build a life of creative freedom and a business that is sustainable and profitable. Those frameworks, it all comes together. It all comes together right here this week, and I hope you're seeing how all the pieces fit now. And I hope you go forward with this and really do the thing that you are called to do in the world. Now, we've got ample time for questions, so if anybody has any questions about this week's content or any content or just questions, please, 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 star 6, because this is our last call together. Star 6 will put you in the queue, and I will answer as many questions as we can field. If you've got a question about what you should do for a freebie or your pricing or something you're not clear on, something I didn't explain, something you thought we were going to cover that I might have missed, although I don't think so. Here I am, star 6, going once, going twice. Okay, well, that is going to wrap it up. This is the end of Creative Freedom, and I am so thrilled that you have joined me on this journey. 6 weeks of really getting clarity for you, for your business, for your life. That's powerful stuff. I know some of you still have some coaching calls to schedule. Please make sure you do that. Next Saturday is the last day for that. We are going to launch another edition of this program soon with some expanded content. If that's something that you're interested in, let me know. I can't give you guys lifetime access because this is a beta launch, but I can get you in at a discounted rate. So let me know if that's something that you're interested in. And in the meantime, do your homework. Reach out to me if you've got questions. I am around and I am here to help. I just want to see you guys build your noble empires, live an inspired life, and not have to sell your soul to do it. So until the next time we meet, this is Lisa Robin Young signing off. In blessings and peace, have a great weekend. Take care.